All right, so this is Bio 160. This is our second class meeting. And it is the 15th of January. And we're going to finish up the first chapter today. I don't know, maybe move on to the next one. I'm not really too sure. But I got to get the projector working. Let's see what happens now. No. And now, yes. Okay. All right, we might have been talking about these organ systems, okay, last time. And our body is, okay, we're going to study the body according to these organ systems right here. Okay, so there is a muscle system in your body. Does anybody know the name of one particular muscle that makes up your muscular system? Well, we're going to learn some in here. There's, for instance, like the biceps brachii in your arm. There's gluteus maximus, okay, in your butt. You probably know a bunch of other kinds of muscles, all right? Digestive system is another system. And can anybody give me the name of an organ in the digestive system? Yeah, stomach is part of it. Liver could be part of it. The pancreas, small intestine. Large intestine, right? Okay. Another important system is skeletal system. What's in the skeletal system?
Bones.
Oh, yeah, like bones. Give me a name of a bone.
Femur.
The femur. That's in your thigh right here. Yeah. Endocrine system is made up of endocrine glands. Give me a good example of an endocrine gland. Okay, like the ovary. Secretes estrogen. A testes secretes testosterone. The thyroid gland secretes thyroxine. So there are a number of endocrine glands in your body. Okay. Nervous system. Oh, that's a real important one. What does the nervous system contain? Oh, a bunch of scantrons. Right here. Okay. Nervous system. Yeah.
Spinal cord,
that's part of your central nervous system. And above that is the brain. Brain and spinal cord make up parts of your nervous system. All right, and then here is one, integumentary system. What the heck is the integumentary system? That's the one I'm going to ask you on the test because it's not one that is too easy. You actually have to know something about it. Integumentary system actually is the largest organ system in your body. Right, and that is your skin and some accessory structures of skin, like your hair and nails and some glands. And there's a little muscle in your skin, too. So when you get cold, your skin doesn't just nice and flat and smooth. It gets what? It gets bumply, right? It gets goosebumps, right? So there's a little bit of muscle in there, too. So integumentary is your skin and hair and nails and things like that. Cardiovascular system is your heart, blood vessels, all that kind of good stuff. Lymphatic system. That's an interesting chapter when we get to lymphatic system because lymphatic system helps fight infections that develop in your body, but it also helps your cardiovascular system work too. All right, so a couple things with the lymphatic system would be the organs that fight infection, like the tonsils in the back of your mouth. And you have an appendix on your digestive tract that fights infections. And you have lymph nodes, like in your armpits, that fight infections. And you also have little vessels that carry lymphatic fluid between different lymph nodes. And we'll see what the purpose of those are, too. Lymphatic system. Respiratory system.
Your lungs,
that's right. And airways, like your trachea, right? And your nose is part of your respiratory system, too. That helps you breathe. Urinary system. This is that's a small one, but very important. Like your kidneys. And then urinary bladder, and there's a little tiny tube that connects your kidneys to the urinary bladder called a ureter. And then there's another little tube that takes urine out of the bladder to the outside world. It's called the urethra. So those four parts make up the urinary system. And then one of the most important and interesting is the reproductive system. Okay, we're going to look at the reproductive system. And what's the purpose? What's the purpose of the respiratory system? Yeah, it's to breathe, to bring in oxygen to your body. Okay. What's the purpose of the digestive system?
To
break down food that you eat into nutrients so that you can absorb those nutrients, right, and get energy from those nutrients. What's the purpose of the muscle system? Okay, it's specialized for contraction, so it allows you to move around. Plus, it also supports your body, too. Because right now, you're not moving around, but you're using a lot of muscles just so that you don't fall on the floor, right? So even though you're not moving, you're still using muscles. So support is important. What's the function of the reproductive system? To reproduce. You know what? I don't think that's a good answer for that one. That's not true. Okay? So we're going to talk about that system last in this course, all right? And we'll talk about the function of the reproductive system then. Okay? But you're partly right. You're partly right, partly right. Okay? I got some things. Okay. So, be aware of what these different things are. And also in terms of the hierarchical nature of what we were talking about. So, what are some of the building blocks of an organ system? What's a building block of an organ system? Okay, would be an organ. So, for instance, a building block of the cardiovascular system would be the heart, would be a building block of it. Okay, and then how would you build a heart? What would you need to make heart? What's a building block of an organ? That is a tissue. Okay, and what's the building block of a tissue? That's a cell. And what's the building block of a cell? Okay, like a chemical, or maybe you could say organelle, right? Organelle or chemical. And then the building block of an organelle would be chemical. Okay, so here is that hierarchical structure of building blocks. So the way you make an organ system is by putting a bunch of organs together. And the way that you make an organ is you put a bunch of tissues together. And the way you make a tissue is you put a bunch of cells. And the way you make a cell is by putting organelles together. And the way you make an organelle is by taking molecules and putting molecules together. And if we put all the organ systems in your body together, if we put all these organ systems together, what do we get? We get the human body, right? Okay, so be able to break down these different levels of organization in your mind. Okay. Okay, let's talk about kind of an advanced concept in physiology, and that is homeostasis right here. What the heck is all that about? Well, let's start by asking maybe a couple questions. All right, are you at room temperature right now? Okay, yes, no, yes, no, maybe, I don't know. Ooh, what is room temperature in here? What do you think? Might be 70-something, 70, 75. Let's just say it's 75. It's close. Okay, but what is your body temperature? Is your body temperature 75? No way. What is it, higher or lower?
Higher.
Thank God. Okay, yeah, it's higher than that. Your body temperature is 98.6. So you're different than the environment, right? Your internal makeup is a lot different than the environment because the environment is dead, but your inside is alive. It's living material. It's got to be different than just the environment. All right, so homeostasis is a way that we talk about how your internal environment regulates itself to maintain life, which is different than the environment around outside of your body. Okay, so homeostasis is the condition in which body functions and fluids and a whole bunch of other factors of your internal environment are maintained within a range of values to support life. Okay, so how does the body maintain itself? Through homeostasis over here. So what could you tell me about your body temperature, for instance? It's pretty much constant, right? Does anybody know about what your body temperature is if you're not sick? It's about 98.6, something like that, okay? And is that temperature absolutely constant? You know what? It's not, because if you were to start exercising, guess what would happen to your body temperature? It would increase. Okay, and if it kept increasing, guess what would happen to you? If it increased a little bit, and then it increased a little bit more, and then increased a little bit more, and then more and more and more, what would happen? you would just burst into a ball of flames. Okay, well, that's a physical impossibility, but if your temperature were to increase and increase and increase, that would be fatal. And that's what we call hyperthermia, right? Or if your body temperature were to decrease and continue to decrease, right, you wouldn't turn into an ice cube, but you would die, and that would be the result of hypothermia, right? So you can stay alive if your body temperature, which is at 98.6, if it stays about at that temperature, you're fine. Okay, so that's the job of homeostasis, is to maintain your body temperature within a range of values that supports life. It means that it can go up a little bit, but when it goes up, what does it do? It goes back down to where it should be. Or if it goes down, like if you step outside and it's really cold, like I was a couple weeks ago in the 60s, okay, your body temperature decreases, but then what does it do? It goes back up to where it should be. So that's what homeostasis means, that things change just a little bit. Everything isn't absolutely constant inside your body. Everything changes. So what are some things that can change? Well, we said temperature is one thing. What's another important physiologic parameter inside your body? Does anybody have an idea what some other important things are inside your body to keep you alive? Okay, like blood pressure, okay, or even the amount of blood that you have. What about blood glucose concentration? Yeah, that can't change very much either, because that could produce death or coma, for instance. That has to be regulated. So we got blood pressure, we got temperature, we got certain kinds of nutrients like glucose. Hormone levels go up and down to maintain your life. Okay, and then there's another thing called pH. That's the measure of acidity or alkalinity inside your body. That's regulated as well. The pH inside our bodies is about 7.35, and that can't really go up or down either. When we get to the chemistry chapter, we'll really look at pH and see what pH means, where it comes from. Okay. It's a measure of acidity in your body. pH is a measure of acidity in your body. Okay. So let's look at the pieces that your body has to maintain homeostasis. So your body has a number of things that's necessary in order to maintain homeostasis. And let's just talk about temperature, for instance. So let's increase body temperature. Maybe you went into the sauna or something, which is really hot. Or maybe you started exercising, your body temperature increased for whatever reason. Right? So there's an increase in temperature. We call that a stimulus to your body because it's changing from normal. That's a stimulus. And in order for your body to appreciate a stimulus, what does it have to have? Okay, so for instance, if we shine a light on you, which is a stimulus, what do you have to have in order to perceive that stimulus? You have to have in order to appreciate light, what you need. Yeah, and what's the sensor for light? Where do you have sensors for light? Your eyes, yeah, there's a part of your eye that has a retina, right? And the retina can sense light, and those are receptors. Those are photoreceptors inside your eye to appreciate light. And if you don't have photoreceptors, can you appreciate light? No, then you're blind, right? So in order to appreciate a stimulus, you have to have a receptor for that particular kind of energy. So inside your body, there's a receptor for temperature. We call those a thermoreceptor, or you could call it a thermometer, but it's not really like a thermometer, right? There are thermoreceptors in your brain, okay, that are sensitive to changes in temperature. That change in temperature is a stimulus. That receptor then sends that information to what we call the control center, or sometimes we call that the integration center. The integration center has got the normal value for that particular kind of energy. In this case, it's temperature, and the normal value is 98.6. And we give that a special name. The normal value is what we call the set point. Right? And the set point is found where? In the control center. Okay? And the job of the control center, and we call this an integration center because it will compare the set point with what's really happening in your body, which is coming from the receptor right here. And the control center then has to make a decision on what to do. Well, let's just say that the receptors are sending 98.6 to the control center, and the control center says the set point's 98.6 and your body temperature is 98.6. What kind of decision does the control center have to make? It doesn't have to make any kind of decision because your body is absolutely perfect, right? Okay, but let's just say, okay, that there was an increase in temperature and your body is now at 100 degrees. And the integration center or control center says, oh, your body temperature is different than the set point. Okay, your body temperature is higher than the set point. Should your body make a decision and do something?
Yeah,
to maintain homeostasis, right? So that you don't get hyperthermia, right? So the control center then sends a signal to this other part, which is what we call an effector in your body somewhere, all right? And the effectors could be things like muscles or glands, but since your body temperature went up, the control center is going to send signals to a gland, and what kind of gland is going to be activated? A sweat gland. You're going to start sweating. That's going to cool your body down because when water evaporates off your body, you're going to get cold. Even if I was like to throw water on you, you'd be cold because that water is evaporating off of you. All right? So that's what the effector right here is going to cause a response. And that response was what? Oh, you can't see it if I point to it anymore, can you? Rats. Did I kick something? I don't think so. I think I just burned a light bulb out. Bummer. Okay. All right, I think a lot of this lecture I can talk about, but this one I'm going to draw on the board. Which is okay, because homeostasis is a real important concept. And if you hear it more than once, that's fine. All right, so this is a concept of a response loop. So we have a stimulus. I'll try to follow the form that's on your piece of paper right there. Stimulus. All right, what is this? What picks up a stimulus? What part of your body picks up is sensitive to a stimulus? It is a receptor. Oh, maybe you have sensor. Do you have sensor on your diagram?
Yeah.
Receptor or sensor are exactly the same thing. Okay? The receptor sends information to the control center. And the control center, a good place for a control center is in your brain, for instance. What does a control center have? Set point. Is right here. So don't forget, the control center compares the value from the sensor with the set point, and if they're the same, the control center is happy, doesn't have to do anything. If there's an error between them, the control center has to make a decision on what to do. And if there is an error, it sends information to an effector. Okay, and an effector could be, in this example that I'm using, maybe a muscle or it could be a gland. All right, and if the stimulus, the initial stimulus was an increase in temperature, okay, what is the decision that the control center is going to make? Is it going to make a decision to, it's going to make a decision to lower temperature. So how could you lower temperature in your body? By sweating or by shivering? If you shiver, what's going to happen to your temperature? It's probably going to increase. Okay, but the stimulus was an increase in temperature. To get back down to normal, what should you do? Start to sweat. Right, so in this particular example, the gland is going to be stimulated. Sweating is what we call a response. Okay, sweating is the response right here. Okay, and when you start to sweat, the response, what is this response going to do? It's going to decrease temperature. All right, so here are the steps of this response loop. It always starts with a stimulus. It's picked up by a receptor, which sends information to the control center. which makes a decision, and it sends information to an effector, which produces a response. Okay? And what can you tell me? What's the nature between this response and the initial stimulus? Does this response add to the stimulus right here or subtract from it? Does this response cancel out the stimulus or add to it?
Cancel out.
I would say cancel out, right? Because the stimulus was an increase, the response is a decrease, and when that happens, right, your body temperature goes back to the set point, and then you stay in a healthy state. Okay? So if the response subtracts from stimulus, okay, we call that feedback. When the response will change the stimulus right here, and if it subtracts from it, we call it negative feedback. All right, negative feedback. If the response adds to the stimulus, we call it positive feedback. I'm going to ask you a question in just a second here. All right, so you got two kinds of feedback. One is negative, one is positive. Which one maintains a healthy, normal state inside your body? Okay. Okay, it is the negative feedback. Even though negative has a bad connotation to it, it's the good kind of feedback to have. Positive feedback produces typically a disease state. And let's figure out why that is. If there was positive feedback, all right, what would that mean? If the stimulus was an increase in body temperature and it resulted in positive feedback, what would happen to body temperature? It would increase a little bit more. And then if there's positive feedback still happening, what would happen to your body temperature? It would go even higher, right? And if there's positive feedback, it would go higher still. It would move away from the set point. So positive feedback moves that physiologic parameter away from the set point, and that produces a disease state. And if it continues to operate, then it's fatal. Okay? So negative feedback is the good kind of feedback to have that maintains a healthy state inside your body. Yeah.
Have you ever had like a fever and your temperature rises and you get shivers?
Okay.
You shiver.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a positive feedback. What's happening right there is when somebody gets sick, your body knows that you have an infection, and it changes the set point right here. So when you have an infection, there's something changes the set point in the control center. Instead of 98.6, it gets set to like 101. And so then you start to shiver, your body gets up to 101 degrees, and then your body is maintained at 101. And the reason why that happens is because a high temperature helps fight the infection. Okay, makes you feel miserable, uncomfortable. That's maybe why you take an aspirin to lower your body temperature. But that's why your body increases your temperature by changing the set point right here.
So it wouldn't be a positive feedback?
It maintains it at that higher temperature, but it doesn't keep going above and above that. So it's still... It would just be using negative feedback to reach the new set point level right here. Yeah. And what something like aspirin does is that it changes the set point back down to 98.6. So when you take an aspirin, your body temperature decreases because the set point is changed back to where it should be. That might not be the best way for you to fight that infection, but hopefully you're doing other things, like maybe taking antibiotics or something. Okay, yeah.
What about a
steam room? Okay, help what? It will raise your body temperature. Yeah, you know, if you go into a steam room, your body temp and you're healthy, your body temperature is going to increase, all right? And this control center is going to notice that, and what's going to happen then? You're going to start sweating, and that's going to try to maintain your body temperature at 98.6. So when you go in a steam room, you sweat a lot, okay? And it's a really nice example, right? So you're going to lose a lot of water to try to cool yourself, right? And some people think that's really kind of healthy to do.
Okay.
Not necessarily so, no. But it might alleviate some of the symptoms like achy joints and things like that. But that illustrates another important point about homeostasis. Homeostasis, we said, was that it doesn't mean that everything's constant. It means that things change a little bit to maintain health. So when you start sweating, what can you tell me about your water balance inside your body? Is it absolutely constant? Your water balance, you start to lose water, okay? But that, what, makes your temperature go back down to where it should be? All right, and then after you lose that water, what do you have to do? You've got to replace it, right? You've got to drink, so you get the sensation of being thirsty. All right, so again, your water balance goes up and down to help maintain your body temperature. So all these parameters interrelate with each other. And overall, it should be constant. Everything should fluctuate just a little bit, but not in large degrees. That's homeostasis. All right, we're going to talk about terminology, body planes, and directions. And I'm just going to use myself as a model for some of this stuff, okay, which is easy to do. All right, so the first thing that we're going to appreciate is anatomical position, because your body can be in all kinds of different arrangements because you've got joints, right? But a lot of times you need to go from one part of your body to another, and you give directions on how you find objects inside your body, and the only way that makes sense is if your body can be put into a standard position to go from one place to another. And the standard position is what we call anatomical position. Anatomical position is when somebody is standing erect with their feet on the ground and their arms down by their sides like this. All right, but notice which way my thumbs are pointing when I'm just relaxed. Toward me or toward the middle of me or something. That's not anatomical position, although it's a relaxed position. Anatomical position means when the palms of your hands are facing toward the front, and which way are your thumbs facing now? To the outside. This is anatomical position. Okay? So the palms facing forward and your head is erect. This is anatomical position. And your body is, especially your forearms, are all straightened out as when you're in a position like this. You're not completely relaxed. Okay, so now when you're in this position right here, we can talk about directional terms, how you get from one part of your body to another. Okay, the front part is what we call the anterior part of your body. The front part is anterior, so I'm never going to use front again. Guess what I'm going to use? Anterior. Okay, and there's another companion term that goes along with it. I hope I have it in your, yeah? And it means the back part of your body is the posterior, okay, anterior, posterior. You usually use these terms when we compare two structures, okay? So, for instance, anterior, posterior, you could say, what could we say? I'm going to use an example when we get to another term, okay? Let's talk about the next one, superior and inferior. Superior means more toward the top of the head or above in that direction, okay? Inferior doesn't mean bad or worse or whatever, it just means what, below, right? Okay, so again, we use two structures to use this term superior or inferior. So let's say belly button and nose. What is the nose compared to the belly button? It's superior. I wouldn't really want to say anterior or posterior, but I would say, yeah, it's superior. The belly button is inferior. So these terms are used in a relative sense. All right, the next term, cranial and caudal. Is that on your notes, cranial and caudal? That applies to other animals a lot better than humans. Cranial means up toward the brain, the direction toward the brain. Caudal means toward the tail. We don't really have a good tail, but a lot of animals do. Cranial and caudal sort of mean superior and inferior. They sort of have that connotation. Okay. Medial and lateral. Think of some midline in your body, right smack in the middle. All right. And so we're going to look at two structures and compare them to this midline in your body. All right. So in anatomical position, The thumbs are, what, close to the midline or far away from the midline compared to this little finger right here? They're farther away. So therefore, we say the thumb is lateral. It's on the outside compared to the little finger. Or we could turn it around and say that the little finger is what compared to the thumb? It's closer to the midline, so we say the little finger is medial compared to the thumb. All right? Or you could say in anatomical position, the elbow is lateral compared to the belly button. Belly button is medial compared to the elbow. Okay, so relate it to some center line inside your body. All right, the next one is proximal and distal. This might be the hardest one to appreciate. You might have to read this in the chapter a couple times. But again, think of some center location in your body. And as you move farther away from that center location, you get to be farther and farther away. We say that that is distal. Okay? Something that's closer is what we call proximal. So if we have an upper appendage right here, we got a couple of joints. We got a shoulder, we got an elbow, we got a wrist. And don't forget, we always use these terms with two structures. So what two structures should we compare? Wrist, elbow, shoulder, what? How about wrist and? Give me another one. Elbow. Okay. So let's just say, what is the elbow compared to the wrist in terms of, is it proximal or distal? The elbow is proximal. It's closer to some center location compared to your wrist, which is farther out. All right. The other way you could say is that the wrist is distal compared to your elbow right here. Okay. So that's how we use that terminology. There are a lot of times we might want to take somebody's pulse to find out if their heart is beating. All right. And what's an easy way to count your heart rate or to feel your pulse? Is to do what? Maybe you'd not be aware. There's a good place up over here, but there's another really easy place right here on your wrist. All right. And since that pulse is far away from your heart, a lot of times we call that the distal pulse because it's far away from your heart. This feeling an artery in your neck, that would be a more proximal pulse to take. So if you're a healthy individual, you can feel your distal pulse, no problem. But maybe if you have cardiovascular disease or diabetes or something like that, then you can't feel that pulse here. You have to go take a pulse someplace else, like a more proximal location on this artery that's in your neck. Yeah.
So what's the major difference between distal and lateral?
Okay. With proximal and distal, you can see that my arm is all connected to each other. In an anatomical position, for instance, my wrist is inferior to my elbow. Okay, my elbow is superior. But in terms of being farther away from midline, my wrist and elbow are as far away from midline as each other. Right, so one is not more medial or lateral. They're both as close to some midline on my body. But if we find some attachment point, you see you get to the shoulder and then the wrist, then the elbow and then the wrist. So the wrist is distal. But in terms of medial and lateral, the wrist and elbow are as far away from some midline. They're both equidistant from midline. Okay, so there's a little bit of a distinction there. Okay, the wrist is farther out in your body. But in terms of medial and lateral, they're just right on top of each other. There's really no difference. Okay, same thing for the hip and knee. Their medial and lateral aren't a good way to describe the difference in location from the hip and the knee because they're both about as far away from midline as the other one. But the hip is proximal, the knee is distal, farther away from some center point in your body. Okay? Yeah. So you have a pretty good picture in your book that shows those directions, as well as body planes. Okay? Body plane is because in space has three dimensions to it. Okay? And if mathematically you wanted to describe, for instance, where this eraser is in the room, okay, we could use a language to tell you, well, you go up the stairs and look at the podium and all that kind of stuff, but if you want to describe mathematically where this eraser is, how would we describe where this eraser is mathematically? We would say, well, in terms of the front wall to the back wall, it's like 4 feet from the front wall. Okay, would that describe exactly where this eraser is? No, you also have to say, well, how far is it away from the side walls? Okay, we say, oh, it's 12 feet away from the wall on the left-hand side over here. All right, so it's so far away from the front wall, so far away from the side wall, that's two dimensions, but what else would we have to say? Floor and ceiling. How far is it away from the floor? So if you tell me how far away it is from the front wall, how far away it is from the side wall over here on the left, and how far away it is from the floor, then I know exactly where this point is, right? So there's three dimensions in space. So when we image the inside of somebody's body, we have to be aware of those three planes. How far is it in a superior inferior dimension? How far is it in an anterior posterior dimension? And how where is it in terms of a left and right dimension? Those are the three dimensions. So we have three planes. I need my eraser. So what does that look like? All right, let's see if I can draw this. Who knows if I can draw this or not, but here is excellent diagram of the human body right here. Okay? And let's talk about the first plane. The first plane, if we separate the superior part of somebody's body with the inferior part, okay, we're going to have a plane that kind of looks like this. How does it look like on your diagram? Is this how it kind of looks? I can't draw it. But I can motion with my hand. A transverse plane is going to be this plane right here. It's going to separate some superior part of my body from an inferior part. That's a transverse plane. But of course, it can have offsets in it. It can go all the way to the top of your head and just separate the top of your head from the rest of your body, right? Or at your neck, it could just separate your whole head and neck off the rest of your body. Or down over here, it can look through a bunch of pelvic organs. But this would all be a transverse plane. What's another kind of plane? It could be one that separates the right side of your body from the left, like this. Okay, so this is what we call a sagittal plane. This is a sagittal plane. Sagittal will separate right and left parts of your body. And there's one special sagittal plane because if you have a hand, usually on one side of your body, what do you got on the other side? You got another hand. You got a kneecap on one side, what do you got on the other side? You got another kneecap. So in a lot of respects, your body has what we call bilateral symmetry, right? So what's on one side of your body is mirrored on the other. Not exactly perfectly, but pretty good, right? So if you have a plane right down, right through the middle of your body, right, that separates your body into what we call equal parts, right? And so that plane is a sagittal plane, but we also call that the mid-sagittal plane. A mid-sagittal plane is right smack in the middle, separating your body into equal right and left parts. So that's two, right? So transverse plane separates superior, inferior, sagittal, right and left. And the other one separates what? Anterior from posterior. That's what we call a coronal plane that goes like this. That's a coronal plane with that mid-sagittal in there. Right. Okay, let's talk about some body regions. This is sort of easy to see. Well, first your head, you know where your head is. That's above your neck, right? Starting at your chin to the top of your head, that's your head. And then your neck is between your shoulders and your head. Sometimes we call that a cervical region. All right, then the trunk. The trunk is everything below the neck, all right? But not including your appendages, like your upper arms and your legs. I mean, your upper appendage and your lower appendage. All right, so your trunk includes your thorax and abdomen. Those are the regions of your body. All right, and then inferior to the abdomen, right, is the pelvis. And the abdomen contains, let's stay with the thorax. The thorax contains things like your lungs and heart. Your abdomen contains digestive organs, and your pelvic region contains reproductive organs, and maybe some digestive organs as well. Okay? All right, and then the limbs. You've got two kinds of limbs. You got upper appendage, or upper limb, and then lower limb. And then this is where it gets kind of fun. These other things are easy to see, but these definitions you have to know because they're a little bit tricky. So for instance, if I point to this part of my body right here, is that an arm? Does that look like an arm to you? Okay. Kind of looks like an arm to me, but you know what? That's not your arm. This is what we call your forearm in terms of anatomy, right? So between your elbow and your wrist, that's your forearm. Where your arm is only between your elbow and your shoulder. So here is your arm, here's your forearm. So if somebody says, oh, I got an arrow stuck in my arm, you don't want to start digging around in their forearm, right? Or a foreign body or something. So you got to know that terminology. Same thing for the lower appendage. If I point right here, does that look like a leg to you?
No.
Okay, that sort of looks like a leg to me, but this really officially is your thigh. Between your hip and your knee is your thigh. And between your knee and your ankle, that's your leg. Right, so you got thigh and leg. So those are very specific definitions that you should know. Okay. Okay, cavities. That would be really helpful to have a transparency of what these cavities are. Okay, but I'm going to just try and draw these things. Here's somebody's nose. Okay. All right, so here's a cavity here, like this. And then there's another cavity over here. Actually, I like this figure already better than the figure that's in your book. You know, there's something I didn't tell you the first time because I didn't want to scare you out of class. All right. Okay. So are you ready to be scared and maybe change classes now? Okay. So your instructor is colorblind. Okay. So when I show these figures, you know, they're nicely color-coded, that kind of stuff. I really can't see those colors. So a lot of times I'll have to ask you, what color is that? And I'm not kidding. So you just tell me what color it is. Don't just look at me like I'm nuts or something. Okay. So in your book, these things are nicely color-coded. I can see them here when I'm drawing it. So the black is one kind of cavity, and the blue is another kind of cavity, right? And by location inside the body. So what is this backside called again? Okay. But in terms of a directional term, is it anterior or posterior? It's posterior. So this is anterior, this is posterior. So here I'm going to say anterior. All right, anterior. There's another name for anterior. And we use these interchangeably. That's dorsal. Hmm? Oh, I'm sorry. Posterior. Yeah, posterior. What's this over here? Anterior. Anterior, and another name for anterior is ventral. Okay? All right, we got it. So this cavity right here that's in black is what we call the dorsal body cavity. So this whole thing is dorsal. So take a guess. What do we call this whole thing here? That's the ventral body cavity. Right. And our body needs to have cavities because you have organs and they have to have a place to be. Your body puts organs inside cavities. So what organs do we find inside this dorsal body cavity? We got the brain. And here is spinal cord, for instance. All right. So we can take a major body cavity like the dorsal cavity or ventral cavity and break it down into even smaller cavities. This one here we call the cranial cavity. The cavity that the brain is in is the cranial cavity. And the cavity that the spinal cord is in is called the spinal cavity, sometimes called the vertebral cavity. So the cranial cavity and the vertebral cavity put together make the dorsal body cavity, and they're not connected to the ventral body cavity. Right? There it's a separate cavity. Furthermore, the ventral cavity can be broken down into cavities too. There is an important muscle right about here that's necessary for breathing. It contracts and allows air to flow into your lungs so that you can have oxygen. It's called the diaphragm. Maybe you've heard of that. So this right here is a special place of the ventral body cavity. We call this the thoracic. Thoracic cavity. And then this one down over here contains a bunch of, well, so what's in the thoracic cavity? You got lungs and heart, right? You got important organs there. You got important organs down over here, inferior to the diaphragm. You've got abdominal organs. So guess what we call this cavity? Abdominal cavity. And then down over here, there's like a little imaginary line separating organs out here. This is what we call the pelvic cavity. So the ventral body cavity is made up of the pelvic plus the abdominal and the thoracic. There's a nice structure that separates the thoracic from the abdominal. There's not a nice structure, it's just an imaginary construct that we have in our mind separating the abdominal cavity from the pelvic cavity. Okay, so a lot of times we talk about the abdominal and pelvic cavity together. We talk about them as being one cavity. And in anatomy, we can take two different terms and put them together and make a word out of it. And it's a legal thing to do as long as we add something to those two words. And that is an O. So if we want to talk about this as being one thing, we can say that that is the, what, the abdominopelvic cavity. All right, and sometimes it's kind of hard to hear because when somebody says abdominal pelvic cavity, don't get that O confused with an AL right here. Always say it really clearly so they know you're saying an O, not an AL. We'll use that a lot, and you could use that a lot too when you talk to me, when we combine anatomical structures as one item. Okay. So, that's good. We got more cavities. And I'm going to go to a little bit different diagram, even though this one is going to be really sad to erase this one. Let's do another one. This was a side view, or what we call a lateral view of a person. Let's do a frontal view. Let's look at from the front of a person. All right, so here we have the front of a person. So here is the head, right? Neck. Sort of like this. Here is that muscle that contracts for breathing, what did we call that?
Diaphragm.
The diaphragm? Yeah, I don't want to draw that in, okay, or write it in. All right, so this is, what cavity is this up over here? That's the thoracic cavity, right? So this is all the thoracic. And thoracic cavity can be broken down into other cavities too. So in the center of this thoracic cavity, right, we've got, what's that? That's a heart, okay? All right, and the heart is in its own little cavity. And then above the heart, there are major blood vessels that come up over here. All right, and then there's another important organ inside the thoracic cavity besides the heart and great vessels. What else you got inside the thoracic cavity? You got lungs that look like this, right? And there's a little notch taken out of this lung because the heart is over there. All right, so the lungs are in their own little cavity. We call that the pleural cavity. So this one right over here is going to be the right pleural cavity. And this one here is going to be the left pleural cavity. The cavity that the heart is in, right over here, is called the pericardial cavity. So you can see that the thoracic cavity has got pieces too. It's got the pleural cavities and the pericardial cavity. And then the pericardial cavity is inside this cavity right here. There's another one that looks just like this. And this one is called the mediastinum. Mediastinum. That's like integumentary system. You probably heard of thoracic cavity and abdominal cavity, but I would doubt that you've heard of this mediastinum. That's a cavity. It's important because what does it contain? It contains the heart and all these great vessels right here. And a lot of times we're very interested in individuals, especially newborn babies that have congenital malformations of blood vessels or the heart, and we need to order some imaging studies to find out what the structural anomalies are right here, and so you'll order a mediastinal scan. And so where are you going to look if it's a mediastinal scan? Right smack in the middle of the thoracic cavity to look at all those blood vessels and heart to see if they're all connected up correctly together, right? So I might ask you some questions about cavities on the test, all right? So guess which one I'll probably pick on? Mediastinum. That's right, because that's a really difficult one to appreciate, right? All right, in terms of organ systems, which one might I pick on? Okay, in terms of organ systems, which one really doesn't make a lot of sense unless you read the textbook? It's the integumentary system, right? So if you use that those terms, you sound really educated, and that's great. All right, so that's the thoracic cavity. Then, of course, down over here, you just have what? The abdominal cavity, and about in this region here, you have the pelvic cavity. Right. So what cavity is made up of the abdominal cavity, the pelvic cavity, the pleural cavities, and the mediastinum? What cavity is that? Okay. Oh, abdominal cavity plus pelvic cavity. Abdominal pelvic, but don't for, okay, let me ask the question again. What's the cavity that's made up of the pleural cavity, cavities, the mediastinum, plus the abdominal cavity, plus the pelvic cavity? What's that cavity in the... That's going to be what? The ventral cavity, as opposed to the dorsal cavity, which is just what? The cranial cavity and vertebral cavity. Okay. All right. So, let's take a look at some of the questions now at the end of the chapter. I don't know if I showed you everything or not, but so you have your study guide, right? Instructor study guide? Right, so be able to define anatomy and physiology. What's anatomy again?
Structure of the body.
Yeah, study, scientific study of the structure of the body. Physiology is the scientific study of
function.
And don't forget they're two different things, but they always relate to each other. If you don't have the right structure, right, you have abnormal function. All right, so we're going to know both of these things. Know the levels of organization. What's the largest?
Organism.
Okay, and an organism is made out of what? Organ systems. And what are organ systems made out of?
Organs.
Good. So you should be able to go up and down that hierarchical level. What are cells made out of? Organelles. Organelles, but if we take a bunch of cells and put them together, what do we get?
Tissue.
A tissue. If we put different tissues together, what do we get?
Organ.
And we get an organ. Yeah, so it's really handy to be able to go up and down. All right. Know the organ systems of the body and some organs they contain. What's the name of the organ system that contains sweat glands? Sweat glands. Where do you sweat from? Yeah, that was kind of a tricky question because you sweat on your skin, right? So that's actually part of your integumentary system, okay? Okay, what's the organ system that has hair? Integumentary system, same thing. Okay, same thing, okay. Know the names homeostasis. Is homeostasis important?
Yeah.
Why? It supports your life, right? It allows you to stay alive. What about negative feedback? Is that a good kind or a bad kind?
Good.
It's good kind, because why would you say it's good? What? How could you maybe talk about that in terms of stimulus and response? Why is negative feedback good? Because the response subtracts from the stimulus, and it takes your body back to the set point. If it's positive feedback, the response adds to the stimulus, it takes you farther away from the set point, produces a disease state. Okay, anatomic position. Am I in anatomic position right now?
No.
No way. Okay, what about now?
No.
What about now?
No.
Oh, that's right, because my palms have to be facing anterior, right? That's anatomic position. And which way are my thumbs facing in anatomic position?
Outward.
Oh, the out is not right. Not distal. Lateral. My palms facing anterior, which means my thumb is lateral. Okay, proximal and distal. Let me see. My ankle is what compared to my toes? My ankle is? It's superior. And my toes are inferior. That's one way of talking about them. But there's another way. Ankle is proximal compared to my toes. My toes are distal. They're farther away from some center place in my body. All right. Body planes. Which plane is this here? Transverse. Which one is this right here? This is what we call sagittal. Sometimes we call it parasagittal if it's off to the side. If it's right smack in the middle, that is mid-sagittal. And if it's like this, this is transverse. Here is coronal, separating an anterior from a posterior part. Okay. Body regions, body cavities. I didn't go over all the body regions. You have one pretty complicated figure in your book that goes over different regions. For instance, like your eye is called the optic region, and your ear is called the otic region. Your arm is a brachial, your armpit is axillary. So yeah, you should know those for the test. Okay, but I won't go over each one in lecture, I don't think. Okay, and then body cavities, we just talked about already. What's the hardest one?
Mediastinum.
What does the mediastinum contain? The heart plus these great blood vessels here. And there's another organ in there that's pretty important too. It's called the thymus gland. Okay, but you'll learn some of that as the class goes on. But mediastinum separates the right and left pleural cavities. Right? Okay. So, you know, that's how we're going to approach the course. I'll talk about everything that's on the sheet, go over the study guide. The quizzes come from the mastery test section of this student study guide right here. The test comes from mostly the questions that are on the lecture notes plus the exam figures. Did anybody print those exam figures out from the internet? Yeah, those are really handy. Okay, that's the...
No, this is not. This.
Yeah, I don't see it.
No.
Nope, not yet. Okay, because I might photocopy one of those figures from your book and put it on the test, and then you have to label it just exactly like it is in your book. All right, for instance, I can hold this up because you can probably see it. This is just what, the body cavity figure? This is an exam figure. So make sure I'm going to erase the labels just like on the study notes that you have. And then during the test, you'll have to match a column of the correct answers with each one of these little structures right here. It's going to be on a Scantron. Yeah, it all will be on a Scantron for a test. Everything, all the quizzes are going to be on a Scantron too. All right? So does anybody have a question over Chapter 1? No? Okay. Well, how about if we just take the test on Chapter 1? Or the quiz, it's just a quiz. Okay, and I won't start Chapter 2 today. So today is the 15th. Put your name on your Scantron, please. because you're probably not worried about what your name is, but I'll want to know in a little bit.